So the streams and creeks around these intrusion targets, think of them as a hill, each stream has gold in it. And not just some gold. We're talking like one stream produced 650,000 ounces of historical gold. So I always say the best indicator of gold is gold itself. You know, sometimes people look at other pathfinder elements, bismuth, barium. That's great. And it's important to do that. But let's not forget that if you want to find gold, maybe gold may be your best indicator. And we're seeing gold in streams and creeks. We're seeing gold in soils, gold in rock, gold in trenching, gold in drilling. And so it points to a very fertile, robust mineralizing system. And again, at one point, these were all connected. If we had a geophysical map, I could sort of play Tetris and put them all together for you. And you'd be like, yeah, that looks interesting. And so there's a lot of excitement that we've uncovered, you know, our own little district here.
Good day, everybody. Steve Yang here, Natural Resource Stocks. I have Tony Retta, founder, president, and CEO of Tectonic Metals. How are you, Tony?
I'm excellent. How you doing, Steve?
Not bad. You guys were there at the Rural Symposium. Would love to kind of get your immediate thoughts on how the conference went. I know that your team was there. Thank you for the meal that you provided, but also there's a lot of buzz regarding metals in general. But tell me about kind of how things have been for Tectonic post-symposium as well.
Well, post-symposium is that we were in the field prior. We went actually into our flagship project called the Flat Gold Project. We mobilized into the field in April, started drilling late April. And so, you know, this year the symposium kicked off and we were in the full swing of things. We now have five drills turning. So camp life and, you know, all the drills, I mean, that thing's going really well, obviously extremely busy, a lot of rock coming out of the ground. And then on the corporate side, in addition to the Rural Symposium, we've been marketing extensively throughout Europe and North America. So no one's sort of sitting back on their laurels. Things are full steam ahead on all fronts, which is great. And gold is making a bit of a comeback too. So that's awesome too.
Tony, for those who don't know the story, if you can start by giving us the website ticker, how people can find you guys, and then just briefly, what's your story about? Where are you guys and where are your projects?
Sure. So Tectonic Metals, Inc., our website, www.tectonicmetals.com. We trade on the TSX Venture. The symbol there is TECT. We also trade on the OTCQX. Symbol TETOF, info at tectonicmetals.com, and even Tony at tectonicmetals.com if you want to reach out to me directly. We have a full suite of executives that represented us at the conference as well. Our Vice President of Investor Relations, Karen Yun, is a great person to speak with on all things IR communications related and all things Tectonic, to be perfectly blunt. Things have been, you know, it's been quite a fulsome year for us. We kicked off the year with a, you know, we started with a news release that stated a $40 million capital raise, no warrant, priced at $2.15. And we had demand within 48 hours, close to $150 million. We closed on $92 million. And that was the sort of foundation for launching a very aggressive program this year, our largest exploration slash drill program to date. And recently, we just announced our first set of drill results from this year's campaign. It was at a new target that we drilled last year for the first time called Black Creek. And this news release reported 5 grams per ton over 21 meters, which had a 17 gram per ton over 6 meter interval within that. So a great start to the year. And obviously the bar's been set high, you know, having drill results like that consistently throughout the year, you know, that's, you know, everyone's dream, but you know, we're up for the challenge and we think it's going to be a good year.
Tony, you've had a huge growth in market cap. You've also done some financing, and I am curious as to what your share structure looks like now. Who's buying in? What are they seeing? And, you know, what's driving the conviction, and why and how are you guys growing so quickly?
Okay, so there's a lot, a few questions in there. Market cap close to $300 million right now, Canadian, that is. Who's buying the stock? So initially, you know, high net worth shareholders, some large institutions. Crescat, for example, has been supporting us for the last few years. They are our largest shareholder, and they also participated in a very meaningful, large way in this financing. But in addition to that, we've now grown our institutional shareholder base to some of the largest and most respected resource funds out there. For example, Franklin Templeton came in with a lead order on this financing and the financing before, actually. VanEck, the JDXJ, if you will, if you're familiar with that index. They're a large shareholder. Libra, Ixios, Deutsche, and you know the list just continues. But that financing was predominantly driven by institutions. And we don't typically see institutions come in pre-resource. And what I've been told is that financing that we've executed was probably one of the largest, if not the largest, single financing ever completed by a company that's at the pre-resource stage. You know, where is all this excitement coming from? So last year we drilled 18,000 meters and, you know, started putting out drill results. I think the first one was in September, and it was a steady cadence of good drill results. But what ended up happening was in January, we put out a drill hole that was a 365 gram meter hole. And there was just like consecutively high grade drill results, 4 grams over 20, 8 grams over 3 grams over 30, 15 grams over 20. It just, it was one after the next. So that really just shone a spotlight on the story and got more eyeballs interested. And then with 191 drill holes, so this is in Q1 of this year, in place at our main target, Chicken Mountain, people started to see visibility for a potential sizable multi-million ounce resource. And so we had, you know, sophisticated or analysts that could sort of interpret geological data, say, okay, you know, 3.3 kilometers of drill strike, 400 to 700 meters in width, still open in every which direction, 191 drill holes. So when you start modeling that and shaping it, you start to say, okay, based on this drill data and the results, we see, you know, a certain amount of million ounce resources there. Also, you take that number and marry it to the market cap, which at that point we were about $100 million market cap. They're like, there was a bit of an arbitrage. So I think that's what drove a lot of the excitement. And then on top of that, where, you know, I mentioned those dimensions, we have Black Creek, where last year we drilled it, got the results in early this year. And that was 4.8 grams per ton over 50 meters, 6 kilometers away from that Chicken Mountain or that 191 drill holes. So then you start looking at that and say, wow, that could be another potential deposit. And then guess what? There's four more targets like that that have deposit potential. And I think, again, all of that kind of fed into this could be a remarkable large growth story. Maybe one other thing I should mention, in addition to that, Nova Gold, which is our neighbor with the Donlin Gold project, that's also 50-50 by NovaGold and Paulson, and they announced recently amalgamation to be one entity. But that's a 40 million ounce gold system. And so you're in the same belt that's already produced a 40 million ounce gold system. They announced a $300 million financing, or closed on $300 million financing. They're moving towards getting their last and final permit. So I think that added a bit of fuel to the fire to say, okay, we're in a proven mineral belt with a tier one asset. What could Tectonic possibly deliver? Can we get ahead of there before the market wakes up fully and sees what the potential is there?
So you got Chicken Mountain and Black Creek. What significance do you see in it being so close together?
Well, I would say when you look at the geological data or even the geophysics, you can sort of postulate that at one point these intrusion anomalies were once all connected. And then through tectonic activity, pardon the pun, they got pulled and stretched apart, reactivated. So you start to see a center that, you know, this could be potentially two different deposits. Are they related? Yes. But, you know, it points to a multi-deposit district that we now have tied up the entire land position. So it's 99,000 acres. But there's potential for 6 deposits. And when I say that, it's not just me pulling numbers out of thin air. These targets, they've been validated because through the geophysics, so we have a signature and we've seen that signature repeat itself. And every time we've drilled a geophysical anomaly, we've drilled 4 out of the 6, we found gold. They just mean it needs more meters to expand it. Another thing to address is that these geophysical or intrusion targets have placer gold. So this is gold found in the streams or creeks. They've been historically mined from the early 1900s right through to the 2000s. So the streams and creeks around these intrusion targets, think of them as a hill, each stream has gold in it. And not just some gold, we're talking like one stream produced 650,000 ounces of historical gold. So I always say the best indicator of gold is gold itself. You know, sometimes people look at other pathfinder elements, bismuth, barium. That's great. Yeah. And it's important to do that. But let's not forget that if you want to find gold, maybe gold may be your best indicator. And we're seeing gold in streams and creeks. We're seeing gold in soils, gold in rock, gold in trenching, gold in drilling. And so it points to a very fertile, robust mineralizing system. And again, at one point, these were all connected. If we had a geophysical map, I could sort of play Tetris and put them all together for you. And you'd be like, yeah, that looks interesting. And so there's a lot of excitement that we've uncovered, you know, our own little district here.
So you got Chicken Mountain, you got Black Creek. Do you see these basically becoming one story, or do you kind of see these as two different stories that are becoming two different flagships? And how do you allocate resources and prioritize where your emphasis and priority goes?
Great question. So one of the analogies I use, and this is a bit of a bit of a Hollywood problem, obviously. You know, when you're in a market that you can only raise so much capital and have so many meters, then you have to pick, you know, where are you going to put these meters to gain or to create the most value. And one of the analogies I use is that if you have 3 kids, which I do, and you can only afford university for one of them, who gets to go? you got to pick one, right? So, you know, Chicken Mountain right now, for context, with 191 drill holes, it has the quickest path forward to development. And what a great thing we could offer our shareholders, a development pathway. But most companies, not all, but most, they have one target only, and they're going down development and exploration gets left behind. But in a perfect world, and what I'm trying to do here is say, okay, let's keep our foot on the gas at Chicken Mountain, and let's still expose our shareholders to discovery, expansion drilling, and that's Black Creek. You know, Black Creek, we only have a handful of holes there, whereas Chicken Mountain, we have 191 drill holes. So if we advance this to development, we can attract a different type of investor. A lot of institutions, they're prohibited from investing in exploration stories because certain liquidity threshold, market cap thresholds, also, and they need NI 43-101 technical reports or ounces in the ground. And so we can feed that demographic or that target base, and then we can go after perhaps some of the people that were at the Rick Rule Symposium that love exploration and discovery can generate some serious torque. So that's what Black Creek is. So we are sort of, I sometimes use the analogy of, I think it's robbing Paul to pay Peter or whatever that saying is. I always screw that up. Maybe that's something we're cognizant of, but you know, so right now the primary objective this year is to get Chicken Mountain to a mineral resource estimate. And then that's targeted for Q1 of next year. And then Black Creek, we have these fantastic drill holes, like 4.8 grams over 50, 5 grams over 20. Let's try to define the geometry of that high grade. You know, does it have a lot of scale and runway in front of it? You know, the surface expression or surface anomalies tell us it does. And now we need to just, you know, do some more drilling to wrap our heads around that before we say, okay, let's go full throttle and develop a resource there. I mean, ultimately, the evidence is so strong right now that that's what we want to do, but we don't want to sacrifice development to do that. I think we can tackle both. And then at the end of this year, when all the results are in, or Q1 of next year, we can then say, okay, how much capital is available to us? And can we be in that enviable position where we have two resources that we're advancing? You know, so next year is going to be, another important year for us. And, you know, I'm just excited because I get to do both. I love exploration and love discovery. And this project continues to offer that with Black Creek and also with some other targets that we've yet to drill test and hoping to test this year.
You might be able to send both kids to college on that pace. Tony, you're at the Rick Rule Symposium. I know that you can't get there unless Rick Rule is a buyer. You have to check certain boxes for you to be there.
Yes, I
spoke with Rick. He says he hasn't met a single company that checks all the boxes. So curious as to which ones you think he thinks that you check. And are there ones that maybe you're working on addressing? And let's go from there. What excites Rick Rule about Tectonic?
I think you need to ask him that. You're asking me to speak for him, which is not an easy task. And I never want to overstep as well.
Let's take Rick Rule out. What checkboxes do people see you guys filling? Like, well, this is why you're a really good company.
Well, what I will say about, because Rick's actually said this publicly, maybe even on one of your interviews, I can't remember. But he said, you know, regarding Tectonic, he's like, let's not forget that they have done this before. You know, and to that point, we moved into the UConn with our previous company, you know, delineated, you know, took something that was never drilled before, delineated 5 million ounces, raised 165 million, brought Rick Rule in as a lead order on our very first ever financing, brought in Electrum, Tom Kaplan, Ross Beattie, Lucas Lundin. So that 165 million came from some very strong shareholders and some very strong respected institutions. And then we produced a very robust feasibility study, and we're about to enter the permitting, and we had three major mining companies come after us. And it ended up getting sold to Goldcorp, now Newmont. So the point being is that, you know, Rick, you know, he looks for people that have done things before. I think he also, his biggest, and a lot of people, and mine too, as an investor, the biggest thing I look for is the people. You know, a lot of investors don't realize that exploration assets, you know, on a financial balance sheet, exploration projects sit on the liability side. They're not assets. They don't generate revenue. They cost you money. So they're a liability. The only asset in any company that's exploration, pre-resource, or even at resource, or just pre-production, it's the people. The people create the value. And so I think that's what Rick is so disciplined on. If he doesn't like the people, you know, you're not getting an invite to his conference. You're not getting his capital. And again, I can't speak on his behalf, but just based on what I know and heard him say in other interviews is that, you know, he would be hard pressed to let geology trump the people. There has to be a huge arbitrage for that to happen. But, you know, so I think that's the box that I think we tick, is that we've done this before. The team has a strong you know, reputation, track record. So it's not just about finding gold. It's finding gold that's economic and finding gold that can be permitted. And our team has had success on all those fronts. You want to find, you know, the reason why it needs to be economic, it needs to be permitted, is because you ultimately want to find a mine. And the other thing that our project on the geology side can offer is scale. And the producers over the last 2 years have elected primarily to buy production. And that has worked to their favor, because hence the gold price has gone up. But what's also happened is a company like Newmont, for example, that has in excess of 5 million ounces of annual gold, they have to replace that. That's annually, by the way, 5 million ounces. So that's 1 5 million ounce gold deposit annually. They have to replace those ounces. And so by buying production, these producers have also created a bit of a looming reserve crisis. They have to turn their eye to exploration. And when they turn their eye to exploration or resource development, they're not going to go after a 100,000 ounce per year project or 200,000, because the risk reward doesn't justify it. You know, it doesn't move the dial on a 5 million ounce per year. You need something that produces 500,000 ounces annually. So that now brings you to a tier one type of project. And what I'm saying about flat is that we're starting to see the hallmarks of a large gold system at Chicken Mountain, but also potentially multiple deposits. And what we believe flat is, and yes, this is to be determined, but our conviction or belief that flat has the potential to be a tier one deposit. And for those that don't know, a tier one deposit, as Newmont or Barrick defines it, is 500,000 ounces of annual gold production over a minimum 10-year lifespan, and then also in the lowest cost quartile. That's your all-in sustaining cost. And then the third leg is that you're in a safe political and mining friendly jurisdiction. And so that's why I think, you know, investors are looking to, okay, where are these institutions, or Rick, where is the next 5 to 10 million ounce gold system, preferably in a North America or a safe jurisdiction that may be appealing to a major mining company. And so I think we tick that box as a potential candidate.
And you also mentioned around you that you had Nova. If you can talk a little bit more about just briefly, just kind of sure. The upside, what that gives you, not only in terms of comps, but also kind of being picked up and the yeah. attention you might be getting because of that.
Yeah, I think so. Nova Gold is 40 kilometers away, or more specifically, the Donlin Gold Project. It is a tier one gold asset. You know, at 40 million ounces, it meets that criteria. It also is a refractory deposit, and that means the gold is chemically bonded or locked into the rock. So it requires different infrastructure, different energy requirements, and a lot more capex than, say, our project, which is a heap leach. So there are we're literally on two opposing sides of the cost and energy OPEX spectrum. But when I look at that asset, you know, it has all of its permits except for one. So it needs their final permit, then we have a fully permitted project. And you're going to have a behemoth of a project going into production. And what that may do to the entire area is that we'll have infrastructure, energy, all the things that, you know, sometimes can make or break certain projects or certain mines. So that will be in the backyard of this of our project. We don't have a formal relationship with them, just other than just being a good neighbor. But that will bring more attention and eyeballs to the district that's been completely forgotten. And so that's the benefit, that we can tap into that infrastructure, energy. There's a permitted natural gas pipeline. It's permitted, but it's not built, that goes from Anchorage into Donlin. And that will be their power source. So can we benefit from that? Again, to be determined. What I will say about Tectonic and our strategy when we acquire projects, and in specific to this one here, is that we always assume that we're going to be all by ourselves. We look at these as a standalone, because you have to. You never want to have your success contingent on someone else's success. And so that's first and foremost. So I think this would just be gravy, if you will, or icing on the cake, if that moves forward.
Tony, I just want to disclose to our listeners that I am not currently an investor, although I know I have invested in the past, but maybe it's time to buy back in, but I'm not giving investment advice. Tectonic and Tony have not paid for this interview. Please do your due diligence. And one of the ways you can do that is to follow their ticker, their website, their story. Reach out to Tony or the staff with questions. Tony, if you can tell us what's the best way to do that, how can people follow you? Where can they follow your ticker, where you're trading, one more time? And if they have any questions, where should they reach out to?
Yes. Yeah, so the best way, you know, our website is always current. We have a sign up sheet there, or a link where you can subscribe to our email list. I think that's the best way to receive all the information about Tectonic, including our revamped quarterly newsletter called The Golden Roost. This is something I'm extremely proud of, and, you know, the brainchild of our vice president of investor relations, who is a fantastic, educated, highly professional person, Tectonic team member, and a great person to reach out to, as well as myself or anyone else on the team, about all things Tectonic. And, you know, the best way to ensure that you get in front of that VP or myself is probably the info@tectonicmetals.com.
And how do people get a hold of Golden Roost?
There is all on our website. So they, by joining the email list or just putting a request for it, you'll receive the last edition. It just went out like less than 3 weeks ago. It's kind of like a magazine editorial type format. And you can also, again, just email us or sign up to the email list. And that way you ensure to get all the quarterly updates, the quarterly newsletters, and all the news releases.
Awesome. Well, Tony, thanks so much for being here. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. And thank you again for this opportunity.